Ethan Strauss. Ethan Sherwood Strauss, I love that middle name, is the author of The Victory Machine, The Making and Unmaking of the Warriors Dynasty.
Well, that's the thing. I stopped watching football, but there are multiple factors. I didn't one day go, I'm such a moral person that I will never watch football again. It was the factor of I'm in the Bay Area. I grew up watching the Chargers. I don't feel as good about the Chargers. I don't feel as good about it. So I just don't have the same connection. Like when I was a kid and Rodney Harrison would hit the shit out of somebody and their head would snap back and I would just cheer without any sense that had any consequence. That used to be how it was. Now that's gone. And so I'm up here and my wife certainly doesn't want to watch football. And there are enough other sports on TV all the time that you have to offer something of a concession. But it's not some big grand moral decision. I don't see myself as a better person when I'm not watching football. It's just what's on TV.
I think a lot of it is just the humanization of pro sports players or athletes. It makes it uncomfortable if you are cheering against someone and then see them have a severe neck injury. And it just makes things really complicated. It complicates the
– Or it the did. We all decided we didn't care a couple of years later. It did. Like we cared for a while and then we went, you know what? Collectively as a country, I don't
want to see Pat Mahomes go wreck people. Yeah. Like it's it's hard because I don't watch football all that much anymore. But my wife loves fantasy football.
That is a sentence I've never heard in my life.
My high school buddies, we have a fantasy football league, and every Sunday, I would be like, "Oh, I want to watch some football because I'm a dude who has fantasy football, and this is what we do apparently."
I've got friends. I was in a frat. Sorry.
grew up in the mean streets of Westport, Connecticut. You know, go Giants. This was one of those things where my wife was fed up with how much I was watching football and like our Sundays would just be robbed because I was watching fantasy football. And one day she was just like, I bet I could beat you in fantasy football. And all like our friends, significant others were like fed up with us watching and being just so obsessed with these games. They decided to start up a Battle of the Sexes fantasy football league.
Oh, wow.
And the women have beat us every single year. They don't know what a shotgun formation is. They don't know what a route is. They don't understand anything about football. And yet they clean us up.
Have they said to you what the market inefficiency they're capitalizing on is?
Yes. We're too loyal to players and teams.
Fascinating. This is like a Malcolm Gladwell chapter.
It's like, oh, I like
the loyalty problem.
Yeah, the loyalty problem is that we're biased. Like, I want Giants players, or my buddy who's a big Eagles fan is always going to get the Eagles running back. And
she's just Bill Belichick, just ruthlessly, dispassionately cutting players, and they no longer serve her interests.
Yeah, and I think also it's. We guys, I think, who are steeped in fantasy football tend to overthink things and tend to go for the sleeper rather than just getting the boilerplate like Larry Fitzgerald pick.
Mm.
And so they're a little bit more conventional. And so I think people, when they pay for like all these fantasy football guides, they kind of have to validate all that investment by reaching for like the most obscure player that no one's ever heard about, but he's going to pay off in a big way. And meanwhile, like the inexperienced fantasy football player is like, oh yeah, I'll take, who is the Titans running back this year? Who just was unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember he's a monster, but I can't remember his name. I just remember people. I was in a sports bar in Lake Tahoe and he was just throwing people around against the Patriots, I think, in the playoff game. I remember him being good. You can see I'm a very
Derek.
Yes, that sounds right.
And like my wife picked him up or like drafted him and everyone's like, oh, he's terrible. Like he's never going to be good. Like everyone thinks he's going to be good. He's never going to be good. And then like all of his metrics were terrible and I made fun of her and I was like, yeah, do you know like he has the lowest like yards per carry like in NFL history or whatever it is. And then Derrick Henry turns out to be like the greatest running back last year, like value wise. And it's just sometimes ignorance is bliss.
I feel like you're trying to end Matthew Berry's career. You know, this podcast should be, now that I mentioned Matthew Berry, should just be talking about sports media. We had Henry Abbott on, and I was surprised. We got so much feedback just talking about ESPN and him and Bill Simmons and whatnot. Look, it's a dangerous game. I feel like I would step on some toes.
What just happened here?
What do you mean?
Are you asking me to air all my dirty laundry?
Yeah, that's what the show is now. That's what the show is now. To notice, I didn't tell you what we were talking about before you got on. You should have known it was a trap. You know, you got a little lazy. You didn't really worry. But now you're here.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars. Winners hang with winners.
One of the reasons why I had you on, Tom, is that I believe we are more in the category of negative Nancy bubble pessimist. And the recent information, I think, has people feeling good about the bubble, feeling sanguine about the bubble, being bubble optimists. So I thought we could maybe analyze, were we too pessimistic or is everybody relaxing too much? Because I feel more the latter, and I look and I read your latest article, which came out a little ways ago, and you've got one coming out soon too. And I think we're almost so focused on this bubble, and we're so into it as though the bubble is going to change things fundamentally, right? I want the bubble to go well and to happen. We need some content. We are in the desert. We need a little oasis just to not collapse and die. Like we need, well, I probably shouldn't say die. We've got, okay, you know, workshopping that. One second, reeling it back.
You have been canceled, Ethan.
We need some content, it feels like, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like we're getting the NBA back, right? It doesn't seem like – when is the next basketball game in an arena going to happen is a question I think on everybody's minds. I loved your article on July 9th because you were giving voice to a lot of what's being said internally, which the idea that there are no atheists in the NBA office right now, that they are white-knuckling it, that there is a lot of fear – because it's so juxtaposed against the speeches that are given and the necessary stoicism that Adam Silver has to present, the stiff upper lip attitude. It's funny. I guess this is very long-winded, but I'm just sort of free associating. I guess what I'm getting at is there's a funny juxtaposition right now of goofy, happy bubble coverage, right? Stuff fit for Instagram and we're fishing and this is funny right here and look at they're golfing and there's the bubble jokes and we only have two positive tests, things are going great, and this very ominous surrounding of the whole affair. Am I being too negative, Tom? You know, is the NBA had on a good trajectory?
Let me put it this way. A few years ago when I was working at ESPN, I became like the shorten the season guy, DNP rest guy. Like the league office was trying to make a huge push into player health. And one of the reasons is because every time I talk to you, and I'm sure you feel the same way, is, you know, 8 years ago or 6 years ago in the NBA, when they're playing 4 and 5s and they're making all these huge trips around the country, and suddenly you're getting more medical data and science about just injuries. I was hearing from players, coaches, executives, trainers, just always bitching and moaning about the travel.
Yeah.
It's like, well, anytime you talk to
I didn't even need to do that. I was a beat reporter. And immediately felt, oh my God, this is fucking impossible. Jesus Christ, this is terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And fortunately, I wasn't traveling very much. When we had Brian Windhorst, Michael Wallace, and Kevin Arnovitz on the Heat Index, they had plenty of them to go travel on the road. So I just stayed there in Miami and South Beach, which was totally fine with me.
Yeah, I remember Brian calling me up after my first major road trip and just saying, how'd that feel? Like, how'd you react to that? And just, we were telling each other stories, and we're just writers. We're just doing the click, clack, click, clack. We're not doing anything physically fatiguing, but you get home from one of those road trips and you collapse in your bed and you can barely move. And it gives you a taste. It gives you a taste of just the impossible gauntlet that the NBA season is. And there's a reason why you hear people say, I love 82 games, I'm used to it. And you hear people say, as we say, as you say, shorten the season. You don't hear anybody say there should be more games. And I think that's revealing.
Yeah. And then the thing was, at that time, I was like, why isn't anyone writing about this? Like, it's all anyone talks about on the road is just how long the season is, how the hotel situation in Detroit or Denver is just brutal, and like injuries are happening left and right, and the trainers and coaches and execs are all pointing to the schedule. And so I started writing about it, and then trainers would reach out to me that I've never heard from and be like, thank you for writing that. Like, we've been waiting for someone to like report on this extensively. I'm like, why wasn't anyone reporting on it? And I think it's partly because it's a little unsavory to be writing about how the sport's not perfect, that the sport could be better, that player health is important and things could be improved if we just didn't get our, you know, heads up our asses about tradition. Hey, 82 games is just how it's always been done. And we can't get rid of 4 and 5s. We can't do that. We can't get rid of back-to-backs. It's just 82 games. No owner is going to sign off on fewer games. And then things started to soften, and players and Steve Kerr was a big proponent of this. It's just resting guys on national TV no matter what, because this is what their trainers and doctors were telling him, is that the players are either tired or they're more prone to injury, or the players just didn't want to play, and so the team is going to cover for them and just say,
and then,
look,
and then COVID-19 said, guys, I think you should shorten the season.
So then the NBA season starts. So then the 4 and 5s are gone. The huge long road trips are gone. Back-to-backs are sliced. Teams are now regularly doing DNP rests. So the culture has changed a whole bunch when they're listening to a little bit more of the science and realizing, like, hey, we can make tweaks to the schedule and reduce 4 and 5s, or, you know, 5 and 7s, or whatever it is. And now I feel like the same thing is happening with COVID. Is when I talk to execs, players, and coaches, they bitch and moan about this system, the bubble. And I was sitting here like, how is no one mentioning this whole testing thing? Like, how come this isn't a huge deal? Is that the Orange County Convention Center that is hosting these huge, massive testing sites, people are waiting in their cars for 2 to 3 hours to get tested. When they do get actually tested, they have to wait for over a week to get their results, which nullifies the whole point. And meanwhile, over here in Orange County in the NBA bubble, they're getting their tests within 12 hours. And so a lot of people in the NBA just felt dirty about that. They felt wrong. They understood the economics of it and saying, like, look, we have a season to play, but this doesn't feel right.
It's an interesting distinction, because my view on it before reading your article was, look, it's not the NBA's responsibility to make sure that everybody in the country has tests. It's just not their responsibility. That's the responsibility of the United States government. That's not something that you can charge a sports league with. But then when you read it and you read the details, and then you understand that it really means that certain people are put on this different tiered system where they're getting their test results days and days and days after when somebody from the NBA would, for whatever reason, that distinction changes it a bit in my mind when it's that obvious, when there is this obvious backlog and people really cannot get tests from, I'm trying to remember the bioreference.
Right. By the way, was doing that Orange County Convention Center testing, and the Florida Department of Health had to bail on bioreference because they were taking too long. Bioreference, the backlogs at Bioreference were taking way too long, and so they had to switch to a different provider for the state testing, essentially, because BioReference wasn't facilitating their results quick enough. And yeah. So then I see that the NBA is getting it, and I'm like, man, optics, whatever you want to call, ethical concerns, this should be part of the conversation of whether this is a good idea.
Well, it's this moral conundrum, because on the one hand, I do feel this way, that this is the responsibility of the government, not of the league. And yet you start thinking about it and going, it's utterly conceivable that if the NBA didn't do this, more people would survive in Orange County, Florida. And what do you do with that? I don't know. I don't know what to do with that, because I think it's important for industries to try to get back online, for us to learn, for instance, from trying these, not to make it sound like the players are guinea pigs, but there is an element of just, we can only know how to handle this by doing it or by trying to do this. And so there's probably some benefit to society from large institutions trying to conduct a testing regime and try to conduct business as normal as it can be conducted. Yes. And we can learn from that, and we can apply that going forward. So there is some benefit there, but there is that moral conundrum where, when you put it as starkly as you put it, you think it is completely reasonable to think this is getting people killed. I mean, it's just reasonable to think that. I don't know how else to think it. I don't know how somebody could make the argument to me that it isn't, based on at least what I'm reading. So,
well, what they would say, what the NBA would say,
they would say we can't know, but they couldn't definitively say no.
Well, no, they could say we have been assured by public health officials and by BioReference that the lab testing that we are using to turn around for hundreds and hundreds of personnel on a 12-hour basis is not appreciably burdening BioReference labs to the point that they're taking testing away from the public. Now, whether you buy that or not is a whole nother thing.
Do you believe that, based on what you know, based on what you reported?
I can't say with good conscience that that's true. But I don't think that the NBA has a job to do, which is to try to get these games going. And the most responsible way to do that is to get daily tests with quick turnarounds.
Yep.
And secondly, you could argue, and the NBA has done this, is they're implementing a research study using a spit tube test from Yale University, a saliva direct test that could be a game changer if they get enough testing to validate the technology.
Yeah.
And they need people to do this spit tube test. And voila, here comes the NBA with hundreds and hundreds of people who are willing to do this. And so they are providing a public good, or I think a public service potentially, by helping to validate a more inexpensive, so an inexpensive, quicker, less burdensome on the healthcare industry. You don't need healthcare workers to administer the test.
Less painful too than the nose swab test, for instance. Which
right.
Is, I think that matters. I don't think we're going to get mass testing if we're jabbing a swab all the way down people's nasal cavities. I just think it will be harder to get it done. People will avoid it. So I think that matters as well. Yeah, that could be of tremendous benefit to society as well. I mean, there are. God, I did not expect the NBA to be in this position where you are weighing the push-pull factors on life and death matters at scale.
Right.
But here we are.
Well, that is an unfortunate circumstance of picking Orlando, the Disney World campus, and hoping that there isn't a massive outbreak of coronavirus cases in that county and in that state. And when they made the decision to go to Orlando at the time, it wasn't a wildfire. It wasn't. And so they, on the best judgment that they had at the time, they said, all right, because of our partners at Disney, because of our familiarity with that campus, LeBron James has played games at that campus before, or we have a team in Orlando. This makes a lot of sense. Shout out to Keith Smith. And so, like, I don't begrudge them for choosing Orlando. I don't. It's just, this has been not... the worst case scenario, but it's pretty close to it. That's what epidemiologists that I talked to said, is like, at the time it wasn't worst case scenario in Orlando, but now with people not getting tests and outbreaks happening, skyrocketing, and it just seems like this is a public health crisis in Florida. It's a really, really tough backdrop. And the NBA is going to say that they are doing community testing. So they're going to donate tests to the community. There's probably more to come on that. But right now, the optics of NBA players getting 12-hour turnarounds on their test results, and the Atlanta mayor who tested positive after waiting a week to get her results for her and her family. It's really tough.
Yeah. And then it's against this backdrop that we don't want to talk about, which is, okay, I wish the NBA the best. I hope that this can all go with nobody getting hurt. And we learn things from it, and it's a glorious bubble, and we see the Bucks Lakers finals in the fall. God, that's so weird. And that all happens, and it's wonderful. I hope that all happens. But then you've got the, how the hell are they going to have the season start next season? There's such this ominous cloud over everything, and it seems as though, because we need some hope, we're almost not discussing it. I don't know how the Warriors are going to get anywhere near financially solvent. And I just use them as one team, but you could broaden that out. Gate revenue is pretty important in the NBA.
40% apparently. Yep.
Yeah. And then you have to consider the travel and just whatever you're going to have to spend to try to ensure safety. And then there's probably a lot of legal expenses, I would imagine. What the hell is going to happen next season? Well, has anybody you've talked to broach that?
Yeah, and actually, like a month ago, a GM said to me, I'd be surprised if the NBA starts in December, and it's probably more likely, given where we're at as a country and the vaccine, that it's something like February. Mm. And I was like, February for next season? And what the GM said was, without a vaccine, how is next season going to happen? Because you're going to have players in their home markets playing and flying around. And Adam Silver has already said that this bubble scenario is not viable for an entire season. This is just a stopgap. So it's going to have to transition to an NFL or MLB program where you're having teams play in their home cities, going back to their families, going to restaurants, whatever, but getting regular testing somehow. But when the flu season hits, and if there's still no vaccine, it's very hard for me to see an NBA working in that scenario. Like how does that work?
And the cascading effects of all of that might be profound. I talk to people. There's a lot of talk of, you're going to see a lot of owners sell their teams. A lot of them just won't have the capital to sustain this. And there are other rich people out there who want to own a team, and a lot of rich people out there who didn't take such a bath in this whole pandemic. It seems as though the stock market might have been decoupled from the rest of the economy, and small businesses have gotten crushed, but the stock price of corporations like Amazon have surged. So you still have a lot of rich people, and there is a finite amount of sports teams, and it's a pretty good ego boost if you have one. And then you've got the rich people who own the NBA teams currently and are dealing with all the financial fallout. And you just wonder if that creates a circumstance where you just want to get off it. It's a good time to just give it to some other rich person who has enough capital to withstand what's going on right now.
So I look at what Malika Andrews just reported an hour ago. The league sent out a memo, which was obtained by ESPN, to teams reminding them of campus rules, including wearing face coverings, masks, dressing appropriately when receiving room service, and going through a mandatory educational session on campus rules. Okay.
That's a three very, well, the ones that bookend it. It's, you know what that reminds me of? It's when you get the shit sandwich email from a manager. It seems like the NBA might have been trying to bury whatever the hell that middle one is about dressing appropriately.
Dressing appropriately when receiving room service.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is actually important. Like, you can laugh and giggle all you want about the optics of you know, an NBA player just naked saying like, hey, thanks for the tacos. But one of the key issues with this coronavirus and the NBA bubble working without a hitch is that the Disney employees are not coming face to face with NBA players or staffers, because the Disney employees are not being subject to testing, daily testing, that the NBA players are. So one way to get around this, Ethan, is to say, look, if we're not going to test Disney employees and we can't get the union to agree to those – the Disney unions, which are very powerful, to agree to those daily testing or quarantine rules that we're subjecting our players and staffers doing, well, as long as they don't come within 6 feet of our personnel, then we should be good. But if people are – NBA players are like – answering their room service door naked or dressing inappropriately, I'm not feeling super confident that those rules are being
Last night I saw Damian Lillard celebrating his birthday with his teammates. On the one hand, it's a very heartwarming, nice scene. And you've got the Blazer social media people there. You've got Amara Baptist recording it. And he's blowing out the candles and they're all just huddled. And I'm just thinking, look, I don't want to be a scold. I don't scold people on this stuff. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an epidemiologist. I would prefer rules be adhered to. It seems like wearing masks indoors is a very good thing. But I was thinking, I don't know if that looks very safe. And in general, when Joel Embiid says these guys aren't going to follow the rules, I would believe him. And it's just – I would believe him.
I didn't say it. Joel Embiid said it. Yeah.
Joel Embiid said it. And players are just so gregarious, and they're so – athletes are so gregarious and physical in how they make contact, having worked at a kind of stuck-up cubicle setting in Yelp versus just seeing the NBA scene in the loading dock. It's just so hard to imagine – you would have to think that the mentality is going to be, well, we're in the bubble, so things are good. You would have to think that's going to be the mentality.
Well, that
we're in the bubble.
That was what I heard most from players, coaches, and execs, is just like the idea of having these rules is good, but who's going to enforce those rules, and are the players going to care? So like one of the things
– by the way, nobody wants to say this either, but this is another undercurrent that nobody's talking about. You've had a lot of racial upheaval in the country of late. How comfortable is the NBA being maximally paternalistic in the enforcement of rules, making a bubble effectively seem more like a prison? Is that something that they are capable of doing right now? I would argue it's kind of tough. That's what I would argue.
And that brings us to the Zion Williamson news. Zion Williamson, this morning, left Orlando to attend to an urgent family matter. And the Pelicans president of basketball operations, David Griffin, says, we fully support Zion's decision to leave the NBA campus to be with his family. Now, I started crafting a tweet to this regarding this news. And I thought about you, Ethan, because I was like, I felt like I had to say, I hope Zion's family is okay. But the game, the season starts off in 14 days, and he has to quarantine for 10 days once he comes back. Or if he doesn't quarantine for 10 days, what he can do is every day that he's gone, he has to get a test every day and then quarantine for 4 days when he gets back.
Yeah.
And I felt so weird. I felt so just strange trying to capture the right tone of like, all right, this is a very serious matter. It appears that Zion Williamson is tending to a family situation, an emergency with his family, and I hope everything's okay. But as a sports reporter, I'm like, also, is he going to play in 14 days? because he's got a quarantine. And
well, it is it is pertinent. I observe what you are saying about not wanting to completely background whatever family matter that he's dealing with. But also, are there 22 teams here instead of 16 teams because of Zion Williamson? You know, is he the person who has effectively swung this? There is this irony right here where his presence, the necessity of his presence, might be why the NBA exponentially increased their risk of something going wrong by going with 22 teams instead of 16 teams, by having rules that would include a Zion team. And then if he can't play, it's just very ironic that this happened. I think it also just speaks to he is a unique star. The NBA is pinning a lot of their hopes to him. Even if he's playing in New Orleans, there is a sense of we need this. We need this guy. This guy, not a moment too soon. Ratings are cratering. We need a superstar who nobody has ever seen anybody like this before. And there a lot of eggs are in the Zion basket. So it is an incredibly relevant NBA story in the way, frankly, would not be if Ja Morant was leaving the bubble.
Right. And the NBA put Zion in the very first game.
Yeah.
The very first game that the NBA resumes its season is Zion Williamson. And it was actually the very last game that the NBA was supposed to play, which is Zion Williamson versus the Sacramento Kings, and it's sold out. Golden One Center, where it was the only national televised game of the season for the Sacramento Kings. And the NBA had to suspend the season, and they were like, yeah, but can we get that Pelicans-Kings game in? And then the Pelicans found out that the referee, Courtney Kirkland, had just refereed a Utah Jazz game, and they didn't come out of the locker room. And then they had to call off the game. And so that's the backdrop of this bubble, is that not only do we have the testing optics, we have players, if they need to go, you know, if their 2-year-old daughter and Zion Williamson's 20 years old, but like there's some families out there, like Jason Tatum was saying, oh, this is going to be really hard on me because I have a 2-year-old son and I'm going to miss him. Like if the wife calls and said, you need to come home, our kid is really sick. You're going to have, it's just.
Well, yeah, a lot of the media in that bubble, I've noticed, have trended childless. They are more likely to be childless in that bubble. That is what I have observed, and I don't know if they ever came to you and asked, but it would be pretty difficult. It would be pretty difficult for me to make that case to my wife that this needed to happen. I would want to do it in a way just because of FOMO and want to see this unusual circumstance, but that's a lot of time away from your family. That's a lot of time.
Yeah. I just did a pod with, Mark Spears, our guy from ESPN, the Undefeated. And he's like day 5 of the quarantine. And he was like, oh, I'm so ready for Sunday to get out of this. Like Sunday, he got there on Sunday. He's passed all his tests. And then the NBA was like, no, not Sunday, Monday. You're getting out. And he was just so devastated by that. He was like, Sunday, I just got to get to Sunday. Just got to get to Sunday. And then they were like, no, you're not getting out Sunday. It's 7 full days that you got to be away. So, yeah. And you see Ben Golliver, who's walking, pacing in his hotel room. 14.
By the way, looking great, Ben.
You look great, buddy.
Yeah, you did whatever you did during quarantine, man. Just tell me about it. I want to apply it. Great job. Yeah.
He walked. I think he posted on Instagram that he walked like 13,000 steps in isolation in his hotel room.
Oh wow.
So it's just crazy what's happening here, and
it's a minimum security prison. I mean, maybe only slightly exaggerated, but that's what it sounds like.
And Michelle Roberts herself, maybe it was as a posturing thing. That was initially when the bubble idea surfaced. That was her like quote. I think it was to Ramona Shelburne, was, this feels a lot like incarceration to me.
Yeah.
And that's the executive director of the Players Union saying that obviously they've compromised. Yeah,
and obviously there are some parallels there, but it's one where people are doing this willingly for millions of dollars in exchange. But the actual circumstances, yes, you could understand the analogy.
And we are just making the point that the longer this goes on, I just don't know. Look, again, because I was on recently a podcast with the more optimistic Bay Area writers, Kawakami, Marcus Thompson, Slater, and they were giving me hell because things have opened up swimmingly, right? And I still just look at it and I still just go, I do not know how the NBA lands this particular plane. I just don't know. I will give the golf clap to end all golf claps if this whole thing goes off without a hitch. I will be very impressed, very, very impressed, because it seems as though they are trying to do something that's incredibly hard, incredibly hard.
And they've put in a ton of resources. They say it's, well, I don't know if the league has officially said it, but reports suggest that they've spent over $150 million to do this. And at first I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. And then I thought, 30 teams, $150 million, that's about what, $5 million per team?
Yeah.
And they actually don't have to spend the money to open up their arenas and pay the arena workers in their arenas. Wait a minute. Mm. Is that all that much?
Yeah, it isn't, except they're hemorrhaging money probably in other ways. So maybe if you're needing to pinch pennies, I think about the Warriors and how ironic it is that they're in a worse financial situation than if they were just lazy. We were all going, man, they made quite the move, hitting the last good piece of land in San Francisco, opening up that jewel box of an arena, having all these concerts coming through. Oh man, they really just turned on the money faucet over there. And now you look at it and go, if they were given the option to just never had done that and only be paying the rent to Oakland on dingy Oracle Arena, I feel like they would make that choice right now. That no, we could build we could wait for this all to blow over and try to build an arena later, because that is a situation where they put a lot of capital into something that was supposed to make up a lot of money in order to pay for what they risked, and it all screeched to a halt. It all screeched to a halt. Now, why am I repeating myself? Speaking of Goodfellas, I'm like the guy who says things twice. I'm just trying to find a rhythm.
Can I steer your podcast into an area that I wrote about and want your thoughts about?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay. Right now, if you wanted to bet on the Pelicans, you can't. Right now, if you go to a bookmaker or a sports book and wanted to bet on
I never liked them as a bet, by the way. I never liked them. Yeah.
If you try to bet on the Rockets game on July 31st, it's off the board.
Wow.
Every other game is on the board. You can bet on it. But the Rockets game is not on the board because bookmakers are not getting information about James Harden's availability and Russell Westbrook's availability before Russell Westbrook said he was tested positive for coronavirus and feeling well and hopes to come back to the team when he's cleared from doctors, right? When the news broke that the Rockets were not flying to Orlando with James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Vegas pulled the game right away off the board. And they're waiting to see what the deal is. And the NBA the Players Union and the NBA have agreed to terms that they are not going to publicize who is positive for the coronavirus. But it's creating some problems in Vegas.
What is their justification for it? Because I know that medically, there are privacy concerns when it comes to people's medical issues, but this isn't an embarrassing medical issue, right? This is something that a lot of people in the country are coming down with, is the idea that they are shamed for having it. What is the logic behind this?
Honestly, I think they don't want to be Rudy Gobert.
They don't want to be blamed for being a super spreader.
I think the fallout from Rudy Gobert and what he went through, and partly by his own doing of, callously just grabbing reporters' microphones on the stage, and mocking the whole thing.
Well, I,
I guess there were rumors that one of the infected players – this is what we do. We spread rumors on this podcast. But having hosted a big party or something like that, and I can't confirm or deny any of that, but maybe there is a realistic fear that you will be blamed, that the spotlight will be on you if you get it, and then people will look through what you did and how you handled your business. So yeah, I'm almost answering my own question that I asked incredulously about a minute ago.
Where's the shame in it? Oh, well, what did Russell Westbrook do? You know, like
there's a lot of shame.
But here's the other issue, because I've thought a lot about this is, you know, if you get tested positive for strep throat, right? Like the NBA is going to publicize it, right? Like Andre Iguodala, or take any player in the NBA. If they pull their hamstring, you know about it. The team publishes that information. There's no like HIPAA law that they're violating by publishing the health status of these players, because they've agreed to it in the CBA. But this is in its own bucket. This coronavirus thing, this is in its own separate special category. And there are sports books, and people are like, oh, who cares about sports books? But like, there are millions of dollars here. A lot of money on the line.
And
nice pun.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, no, that's a huge industry. It's one that the NBA has, I think, in a way, well, this is a whole other topic, but I feel as though the NBA thought sports gambling was going to save their slide in interest domestically, and I just don't see the numbers in it. I like NBA gambling quite a bit, but I think it's a little more niche than the league would want it to be. And so, yeah, that's a real industry, and that matters, but it also speaks to this general atmosphere of, do you want to feel like it's opaque, or do you want to feel like we know everything and everything's out in the open? It seems like the former is maybe not the best atmosphere around this whole thing. Just saying.
Like, we didn't know that James Harden was going to the bubble until the Rockets posted it. And that's another thing of this, is that because of the media being quarantined, and because there's just this lack of transparency on everything, we don't know why James Harden was gone. We don't know what happened. And this is not not important player. This is like a MVP, a huge player. And we have no idea if he's healthy, if he's not, if he's injured, if it was totally innocuous and like he was tending to a personal matter. We have no idea. Mike D'Antoni's asked about it every day at the Zoom calls. And like, he just says, yeah, it's something I can't really talk about. Moving on. And, and so imagine like the day before a game, a player is just scratched from the game. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that my Thunder 100-1 bet is maybe a good bet in this chaotic situation. That's what I'm thinking.
What I'm thinking is, and what the sportsbook are thinking is, does he have coronavirus?
Yeah.
It's the immediate thought, because if the NBA is not publishing
And then there are downstream implications to it, because, well, if he has coronavirus, there's a good chance that the rest of his team has coronavirus, because – look, I don't know all the details of this particular test, but it seems as though with any test, there is a lag between having it and being symptomatic enough that it shows on the test. And so if you assume that a player is spending the most time with his specific teammates, then you are going to go, not only do I think that this player has it and that's why he's been scratched, but pretty soon this whole team might be blown out of the water.
Yeah. And so then if you're
gambling advice from Ethan Strauss,
if the NBA is not going to publish that information because the privacy concerns, I just think that each injury or each scratch thereafter is going to be having this cloud of, oh no, does he have COVID? And so it creates this negative externality of, now everyone is suspicious of having tested positive for COVID. And so it's really difficult to manage. And that's why
the NBA is going to need to, you're right, because if they say non-COVID when a guy is scratched, then you're just going to be able to know, process of elimination, that anytime they don't say that, it's COVID. And so, yeah, this is a great point. This is a great point. And
people say, who cares about the gambling? But it's just so – the implications are so much broader than it is for the specific player. And man.
Okay. How about this? Futures.
Mm-hmm.
If this situation happened in like August 6th and James Harden and Russell Westbrook just did not play, or take Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis, right? They decide to sit in a game and you don't, and there's not really information coming out why. Like, do the sports books have to take that down, the futures?
Yeah, I think they would almost have to. Man, because not only with them, again, there's the downstream effect of what about the other players on the team that they've been hanging out with? I mean, it's like the
bubble.
I listed 9 reasons why the bubble could pop. I didn't even come up with this one. God, this is such a difficult situation as they are making it up as they go along. And then you've got the power dynamics of the superstar players are used to calling all of the shots. I mean, this is such a thing for them to adjust to. I don't know if the Rockets wanted Harden to just show up that day. Nobody seemed to be expecting it. D'Antoni doesn't seem to know anything about it. So
We know, James Harden just didn't want to go to that first 3 days of practice. It's just like, straight up, I want to just spend some more time with my family, my friends before I go into this bubble. Right. That's fair. But why wasn't that out there? You know, why couldn't it just been like, hey, he's got some personal stuff that he's got to tend to, and he is not positive for coronavirus. Don't worry about that. And then he comes into the bubble. But there's just it's not so much that if this happened to Austin Rivers, I don't think this would be a huge deal. But in Vegas, if James Harden is going to be out for 2 weeks, or if another superstar player is going to be out for 2 weeks because they tested positive for coronavirus, that has not just only huge implications on the Rockets. It has huge implications on the millions of dollars that Vegas has to manage, because they have to set the lines for those players for those games, and they have to adjust their futures markets. And if one player goes down for weeks because of the coronavirus, and this is no different than if he blows his knee, but we know when a player blows out his knee, like, we know that it happened. Everyone's going to ask about it and they reveal, oh, he went on an MRI. Like, that's transparent. But this is different because it seems like an attempt to hide things from the public because of privacy concerns. And that just has ripple effects that I think we won't realize until it actually happens. And it's just something that, it's going to be difficult. And
I might have read it wrong, but I noticed that the Nuggets odds of winning the championship actually went up after Jokic got it, because I think there's this other calculus of, well, if the superstar has the antibodies, then it's less of a concern going forward.
I don't know if the
books are making that calculus, but why wouldn't they? It's a brave new world we're living in.
I mean, there are people who are doing coronavirus parties out there and thinking that this is like, hey, if I just get it and get it over with, then I can go and party and do all that stuff and I'll be fine. But then people die. And that's the problem, is if you're okay with like getting the coronavirus just to get it out of the way, that sends a really bad message to the public about the seriousness of this disease. So, There's also that dynamic that, like, all right, well, Russell Westbrook, and if James Harden turns out the absence was about coronavirus, maybe like people are going to feel more confident about the Rockets going forward. But on the other side of that is like, do we know about their conditioning or their health? Like, we have no idea. And that's another thing, is that these bookmakers are having to read between the lines. Like, what does feeling well mean for Russell Westbrook? Does that mean like he's got he has breathing issues, or his lungs are fine, like he had any headaches or fever or whatever it is? And the bookmakers are having to be doctors, play armchair doctors now, because they have to decide, is Russell Westbrook's game going to be impacted by the fact that he tested positive for coronavirus? And that's this is all just uncharted territory.
Yeah. Well, good luck, NBA. We wish you the best of luck. We are, to be clear, Tom and I, as people who make money off the NBA and people who just like sports, we are not We are not being chicken littles because we want the sky to fall. We don't. We just see a sky that is hanging by a thread. That's all I'm saying. I see a very tenuous, I see piano wire holding that sky up, and it's hard not to notice. It's hard not to go, oh my God, look at all the reasons this can go wrong in the short term, and my God, the long term. The long term is scary, Tom. Well, join me on my baseball podcast in 2 months.
You're going to be going to clicking about pitches from the Red Sox and Yankees.
Yes.
Next.
It just seems easier for the outdoor sports. It seems easier. I know they've had a lot of problems over there in baseball. I am aware. Tom, this was great. This is great. You've been on it. You want to plug anything? You want to do the old plug? The old plug.
NBCSports.com/Haberstroh to read my latest stuff. The Haberstroh podcast coming out with Mark Spears, Oakland's finest, Bay Area's finest. He's on the pod this week. And the Haberstat every week or every other week, I guess, these days. Yeah, go check out. I'm trying to come up with new name puns. The Haberstrossage that I made for Count the Dings, the sausage thing. That I'm sorry, I had to do that pun.
Well, you are a dad. You are a dad indeed. So everybody go check that out. Tom, this was awesome. We need to have you back. You've separated yourself as somebody who has been thinking about these issues and writing about them cogently, and we appreciate that. So without further ado, everybody, I used to say stay safe out there, and I meant it metaphorically, but now I mean it literally. Listeners, stay safe out there, please. Wear those masks. Avoid high-risk events. Thank you to Jade, who's done a spectacular job producing not only this, but Point of Contention with Marcus Thompson. You should check that out.
Oh, that story was so good, Marcus.
I can't even remember which story. There were multiple stories.
The weed in the bubble story.
The weed in the bubble. Oh, the story he wrote. I thought you were talking about the stories the yarns he was spinning. But yes, that was also excellent. Go check that out. Hey, have a great summer, guys. Talk to you soon.
Wait, is this the last pod you're doing for the summer?
I'm predicting doom and gloom, Tom.